everybody.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And wanted to talk to you about something that happened today, which led me to a thing I wanted to talk to you about in general. Young couple came in to see me today. Very young, in their 20s. Very much in love. Have some communication skill difficulties. They're planning on getting married, but they're not really sure because they have difficulty talking to each other. And as they talked and they talked about some of the difficulties, I understood that people don't really know how to talk to each other and what to look for. And it's something you gain over time. And I said something to them at the end of it. I said, you know, in all truth, if you can't have a communication with somebody, holding their hands and looking in their eyes, if you could possibly do that and continue talking about something that you may even disagree on, if you could do that, the conversation's going to come out fine. There's a reason why people can't do it and don't do it. Why don't people who love each other, if they want to talk about a problem, hold your other person's hand, hold them, look at them. Honey, I want to talk to you about this, okay? What is it? I'm a little distressed by this thing. Well, tell me what it is. I don't want you to be distressed. And if that holding of the hands and looking at each other would be effective, as we know it would lead to beautiful communications. But then it's a funny thing. It doesn't work that way. People don't seem to want to do that, since that's the perfect way to have an effective communication with somebody you love. Why do they do it any other way? Why does it become this battleground of you, the accusation, the battles, the distance? Why? What is that? What goes on? So we were looking at this today, and we're examining it. And I want to examine it from a number of different points of view. The primary one is just about communication in general. What does it mean? So this couple taught me a secret today. They said at one point we were talking from love, and then I got scared, and another part of me came out, and it became accusations back and forth, blame, characterizations. You know, you're too slow. You're in general, you're this, you're that. And I thought of this proposal. Here's a marriage proposal that I propose for anyone who's going to get married. And here's the way I think it should be. It should be, instead of all the other things I promise to honor and obey and do all the things, here's what I think it should be. I promise to fight my demons and love you. And the other person would say, I promise to fight my demons and love you. It's all about your inner demons. It's all about the impulses and the fight and the stuff that you carry on from your history, your chemistry, your biochemistry that stops you from being able to really talk to someone else. It's pretty hard to have an effective communication. Now, what are the different things that we want to do? Now, this is not just with couples, but in having a good communication with anybody, what are the things that we are looking to do? Number one, we want to pay attention. Now, this is if someone is talking to you and you're talking back to someone and you want this communication to have some effect, you need regard. What does regard mean? I remember once when I was studying French as a kid, they had this expression, regardez la neige, which meant look at the snow, but it really meant regard the snow. Regardez, what a good word, regard. When you have regards for somebody else, you're considering them, you're looking at them. So I think in any real communication, you're regarding the other person, you're looking at the other person, you're communicating with them. And your mind is not off somewhere else. It's appreciating that they are a human inside a human body, and that they have demons inside them, and you have demons inside you, and you're trying not to get these demons to come out and start war, and that you're listening to them. Listening. But of course, who wants to listen to somebody who talks about nothing all the time? You want to talk to somebody and they want to talk about superfluous stuff, or they want to talk about garbage, or they want to talk about the neighbor next door, and you don't want to talk about that. What do you do? Well, one of the things you do is, instead of saying, I don't want to talk about that, is you try to get them to join you in a discussion about the present, about what's here, about now. And how would you do that? So let's say you and your friend get together, and your friend says, hey, you know, that guy over there, and this is what he did, and he was so on and so forth, and he starts talking about this other guy, and you said, hey. So instead, if you turned around and said, how are you feeling? How are things for you? How's your new job? You cut through talking about the outside people, and you bring it to the personal. You don't have to be very dramatic about it, but you bring the person home. Bring them home. Get them back on the planet. Invite them to join you in the present instead of talking about all the other stuff. Bring them in the here and now. And then when you're communicating with someone, you'll find that a lot of people want to talk about it. Did you read the latest newspaper? Did you hear about, you know, Tony Curtis? It's a true story, by the way. Tony Curtis recently died. For those of you who don't know it, who are Tony Curtis fans, I'm sorry to report he's left us. But Tony Curtis, when he got buried, they buried him with his Stetson hat, a pair of gloves, and he wanted to be buried with his iPhone. Yes, he requested that he get buried with his iPhone. Isn't that funny? Maybe he wants to get communications after he goes. Maybe he'll get a call or two, but he wanted to be buried with his iPhone. But so you want to talk about Tony Curtis, they want to talk about it, and you want to communicate with them. Well, you know, maybe you don't really feel like having that kind of a conversation. Maybe you want to talk about them, so you just say, how are you? Not how are you feeling, give me the detail, all of that stuff, but just trying to get the person to talk about, hey, did you like Tony Curtis? What was Tony Curtis to you? Do you remember Tony Curtis? Tell me about it. Tell me about your feeling about it. One of the things that people do to each other in communication, that's one of the worst things you could do, is analyze the other person. You get frustrated with somebody, you start telling them about their pathology. You know, you start saying, well, you know, you're really neurotic. Hey, you're this, you're that. Yeah, you're really attached to your mother. Yes, you know, this is what you do. And you start pointing out. Now, keep in mind that we have all kinds of weapons that we all know. Those of us who listen to the positive mind have this weapons about human functioning, and you could practically get anybody to cower under your accusations of their inner psyche. But don't use it. Don't ever give anybody information about themselves that they don't have on the table. It doesn't get you anywhere. They just get angry and they get defensive. Now, one of the things that you want to figure out is about the nature of emotions in your history, in your family, and in your being. Are emotions acceptable? Maybe they're not. Maybe the person's feelings aren't acceptable. So we did a little research and we wanted to check out, what is the difference between people who have emotional conversations and the people who don't have emotional conversations? And Stephanie, let's turn this over to you and what we found about mirror neurons and so on and so forth. Stephanie Dunger.
Hi, Armand. Okay, we just have to, you know, go into there, those little parts of our brain that we're learning about and where these different areas kind of light up when people communicate and experience. And one thing that was recently described in one of our research articles was this idea of what you just said, a part of the brain that activates the mirror neurons. It makes us feel emotionally empathic. So when we see somebody suffering, or we see them even also be happy, we can experience it as if we ourselves are experiencing the very thing that the other person is experiencing.
Maybe not on that intense level, but we do reflect on ourselves. Now, this you say, you said when our brain lights up, you mean under a neuroscientific imaging.
Brain scan.
Imaging,
yep.
Right. I mean, people may not know about that.
Right.
They may think your brain just lights up. Yours does. I've seen it here in the studio. I see little things going off on the right and left. Mine does for sure. But if you're in a brain scan, one of the things they find out is that there are different parts of your brain that light up when you're having different experiences. Now, mirror neurons are specific neurons that certain people have that help them become compassionate by nature of being able to feel themselves to mirror what the other person is feeling. Mirror neurons. That's one way of doing it. How's your mirror neuronal network? Are you somebody who is like that? Do you empathize? Do you feel compassion? Now, what's the opposite of abundant mirror neurons? When I say abundant, I mean there are some people who are all compassionate. They're all identifying. You know, they're having emotional reactions to everything you say. If you say that you hurt your foot, they go, ow. Right? That's one level of it. What's the opposite end of that?
Well, there's another area of the brain that is actually, there's a term for it, and it's a transient parietal system. It's another kind of a part of our brain that helps us analyze and fix things and think of solutions. So it's more of a solution-based kind of thinking process. It's a cognitive, they call it cognitive empathy, as a opposed to the emotional empathy that a person would feel when they have all those mirror neurons working, so to speak. So you can see on their face, emotional empaths really, you know, get into the conversation and experience and have all that kind of facial excitement, so to speak.
Transient parietal. Let's get that word. Transient parietal. What?
Junction. That word, junction's in there. So let me say it again. It's temporal parietal junction system. That's okay. Actually what it's called.
Temporal parietal junction system.
God bless us.
And we know that has to do with one of the lobes of the brain, the parietal lobe.
Okay, yes. And those are different parts of the brain that, again, are involved with a lot of different things. Recognition and seeing things and being able to, you know, spot objects and label things. So it's a different part of the brain.
So let's go back in time, in early history. Why we developed the temporal parietal junction system? Because you have to be able to solve problems if you're a hunter. If you're primitive, there are certain beings that have to do more problem solving than other beings. Certain beings have to be compassionate, and other beings have to be less compassionate and more just go take care of the problem. This has generally been identified with masculinity and femininity. Not that it is about men and women, but testosterone, the male hormone, and all of its accompanying things that go with it. Say, you know, the hell with the mirror neurons. Let's go take care of the problem. Right? Somebody just, you're running, you have three babies, and somebody just ate one of your babies. Let's keep running. Not going to sit there and say, oh, my poor baby. That's what they do on the Serengeti. It's like, this is it. We got to be action. We don't have to have feelings now. At one extreme, that's the extreme, and I hate to use the word masculine because men are not like this completely because men have feelings too. But on the extreme of masculinity, that's kind of what the brain set you up to be. And when you hear the programs that Stephanie and I are doing, we are preparing a set to talk about male chemistry, which we'll talk to you about later this week. There's the male brain. But this thing about all the way on one side of us is this problem-solving thing. And then all the way on the other side is this mirror neuron thing. And what happens when a mirror neuron meets a problem solver, right? So if somebody goes in and they said, what's the matter? You look terrible after your phone call. And the person says, I just found out my mother died. And the person says to you, oh, you're going to have to arrange the funeral? See, the mirror neuron person says, oh my God, I'm feeling terrible, and they're about to show a feeling, and the other person immediately goes to solutions, as if there's no feeling, because this is the way nature kind of built it. Now, here's the problem. You don't have to solve every problem. I had a friend named Richard. Whenever he would talk to people, no matter what they would say, he would propose a solution. Now, there is nothing worse than hearing people propose solutions all the time. If you say, I feel sorry I broke up with my boyfriend, and they say to you, well, you got to go find a new boyfriend, or you got to call him up, or they give you advice, it's not what you want. So what I told to Richard, I said, Richard, you're always giving advice. Let me teach you a trick. And a trick I taught him was to say the following, sorry to hear that. He came back to me a year later, and he said, Armand, you can't believe how my life has changed. Whenever somebody tells me their problems, the first thing I say is, I'm sorry to hear that. And it's amazing. They're satisfied with that. They like me for that. Because what he's reflecting now is mirror neurons. What he's saying is, I'm sorry to hear about your problem. I don't have to solve it. So solving problems is not the solution when listening to people. Mirror neurons are not necessarily the solution. Something in between.
Well, I think that's where this communication breakdown for a lot of people probably winds up, you know, explaining better. We now have an understanding. Why do women feel like if they're talking to their man that they're not being listened to, or they're actually feeling like they are emotionally cold fish, you know, all those kind of dynamics? And why does a man say, classically, you're just always overreacting? So neither one of them feels understood. And if you have some understanding of it, you might not be as angry at your spouse, your partner, if you understand their styles. It doesn't make them. And again, both men and women have these two components. It's just, again, and I also believe in neuroplasticity. I believe you can change these things.
Like Richard did. Absolutely.
By practicing it. So the more you practice things, the more you can understand and I think have better communication. I guess that's the whole point. We're trying to explain that these things are there for us to learn and then practice and have better communication and less volatility in your relationships.
Now, what happens when the demons pop up? And what are the demons that we have? The demons are the reactions we have inside from pain from the past. So if somebody says to you, for example, you may have an abandonment demon, and many people have this. The abandonment demon is, if you threaten to leave me, I want to kill you. That's generally the way the demon works. I cannot tolerate your walking away. So that what you're going to do is you're going to, in the middle of a conversation, quit and run away. And that's going to be your power. And what happens to you once you threaten to leave is the other person, the person with the demon, decides that they're going to do anything possible to get you from leaving. But they're also going to hate you a little bit. You don't know it. But that threat of leaving is going to cause a wound that's going to go deep. And they're going to get you to stay. And then when you stay, at some point in the future, they're going to get even. The demons don't like certain things. They don't like being told. Like if you say to somebody they're wrong and you beat them over the head until you prove that they're wrong, and they give in, they don't like it. Some demon inside, some part of you inside is at some point or other going to get revenge. So let's say you're having a conversation with someone and you bring up to them that, you know, you're having a conversation, you're trying to collaborate on something, and the person says something to you and you turn around and you say to them, well, you know, you're just, you're always being taken advantage of. Or you do one of the dirty tricks. You know, your friends all say that you're silly. You pull in the outside people. Another dirty trick. And it triggers a demon. Now that demon is going to get revenge. Now you're going to get revenge on the person. So now, instead of having a conversation, you start having an accusatory conversation. Now it's you. And here it goes again. Now you blame each other, and you blame each other, and you point at each other, and you see who's at fault. And then you're yelling at each other, and then it's kind of horrible. It's like you say vicious, bad words. And then you get to a point where you say, this relationship is over, and one person threatens to abandon, and the other threatens to abandon, and you just get carried off. You don't know how to come back from it. I wish there were a way. I mean, I really like the pie in the face trick. The pie in the face trick is something that is like, you know, there used to be something in vaudeville where they would have a pie crust. Do you remember this? And then they would fill it with whipped cream. And then they would throw it at each other. And a person would get a pie in the face. Or they get, it was like, it's like, oh, come on, stop what you're doing. Stop everything you're doing. Here's a soft punishment. There should be a way. Because what I think happens with couples and even with friends is when you have a bad communication, you're going to get even. It sets up a kind of a thing that you may not talk about, but somehow, somewhere down the line, you're going to get even. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Let's talk about communications with people in general. So some people like to be heard. Other people never expect you to hear anything. And you can tell by the way they talk. They talk from this kind of self-reducing place. Did you ever hear somebody who uses very few words? They talk about themselves very little. And the minute you interrupt them, they give up the conversation. They stop talking. They let you interrupt. They hope you interrupt. They go along with your interrupting. But behind them, in their mind, they say to themselves, that person's not interested in me because that person interrupted me. But the reason you interrupt them is because they present themselves in such a weak way that you almost get bored with it. It's like they're talking about themselves in such a weak way. So you jump in to save the conversation. You jump in because you think it's important to say something. So who's at fault? The person who interrupts people? Or the person who lets themselves get interrupted and, in fact, invites people to interrupt them. So interrupting people is not a good way of communicating with them when they're talking. But some people, I have one friend in particular, who talk ad infinitum. They will not stop talking. And you want to interrupt them. You just say, I don't want to talk about that anymore. Or you say, let's talk about this candle, or you do something about it. So interrupting is not such a bad thing. However, interrupting without realizing that it's going to have a cost, that is something. Now, let's talk about the people who have the mirror neurons. Mirror neuron people mostly, as you said, it's considered an effeminate quality or a feminine quality, has to do with female. Women talking to women a lot. They talk to women a lot. Women talk to each other a lot, and they talk about everything. And they frequently talk about their men. Now, this is a very interesting thought. Women talk to women about men a lot. Men almost never talk to men about their women, about their mates. Unless they're complaining a little bit, which they'll do for just a little bit, she did this and she did that and she did that. But, you know, it's considered among men, you're weak if you're sitting there complaining about a woman. What's the matter with you? Why aren't you just handling it? Please don't bring it to my attention. But that's because men don't have those mirror neurons. They don't feel the sympathy for that. They don't want to talk about that. They want to say, if you're not solving it, what's wrong with you? That's how men communicate with men. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. In a little while, we're going to be taking your calls, and I want to hear about you and your world of communication. The picture here that you're looking for is that there's a level of communication where a person feels heard and a person feels understood, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the person who's not capable of it doesn't have it. It's just two different kinds of people. And it's an invitation. Sometimes it's an invitation to say to someone else who's got problem solving, you know, like your mother may be a problem solver, your father may be a problem solver, to say to them, do me a favor. Don't solve this problem. Just don't solve it. Just hear me. What does that mean? What does it mean to a father who's saying, what do you mean just hear you? You just want me to hear you? Yes, I just want to talk to you, but I don't want you to solve the problem. It's hard for them to understand. It's hard for them to understand because, remember, in order to do this, you're shifting a biological chemistry. It's very difficult. But if you yell at somebody and you're shouting at somebody and you're accusing them, you never get an honest response. Nothing honest happens with raised voices. It just doesn't. Screaming at each other doesn't get you anywhere except some kind of cathartic release. Most of the demons that we have are demons from our past, fears that we have that get triggered, things that we're afraid of. You know, if you've been lousy in relationships in the past, you're always afraid that you're going to be lousy again. If you've been failed, if you've failed time after time after time, you're afraid you're going to fail again. If you have childhood fears of being dominated and controlled, I have one friend who's always afraid she's going to get lied to. But she's the kind of person who reacts so strongly when a truth doesn't fit her system that everybody lies to her. But everybody does, because it's by nature, I have to lie to you. If you are going to react so strongly to everything, how can I tell you the truth? But then she feels bad because she believes that everybody is just going to trick her because she believes it's a vulnerability. Truth of it is, it's the overreaction that creates that. But you learn about yourself over time. Overreacting, screaming, yelling, hollering at each other, accusing each other. You may think that it's communication, my friends. It has nothing to do with communication. It just has to do with beating each other up. One man I knew the other day, when a woman said to him, so what are we doing still having this conversation? He said, because I want revenge. And he said, I'm punishing you as best I can. You know? And he just admitted to it. Because somewhere inside, a lot of people, whenever they get hurt, they want revenge. You know, and it's almost natural, I hate to say. People are funny. People are very funny and they're loving. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music and then back to you.
In your mind, one foot on Jacob's ladder and one foot in the fire, and it all goes down in your mind. Living at the bottom of the stairs of life, never a smile knocking on your door. The air is blue and so are you. Prehistoric monsters on the floor. Last verse of your last song, and God don't hear dead men. The end of the line is in your mind, and you'll be staying in your mind. Tooth, heart for heart and soul for soul. Somebody said, what is truth? Lock it up and close it down. Sound the morning like a dove. High beyond the rattle and roar. Look into the face of love. In your mind.
In your mind.
Jacob's ladder and one foot in the fire, and it all goes down in your mind. the mentalist pie, but just a piece, you understand. You get the rest up in the sky. Praise and glory, wounded angels shuffling round the room. Eternity is down the hall, and you sit there bending spoons. In your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, sacrificial drops of pain. On a silver-plated cross, sanctification on a chain. They say redemption draweth nigh, but storms of silence from above. Stop your ears and close your eyes, try to find the face of love. In your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind. Jacob's ladder and 1 foot in the fire, and it all goes down in your mind. In your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind. It all goes down in your mind.
1 foot on Jacob's ladder,
yeah,
and 1 foot in the fire, and it all,
yep, 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 in your mind. Yeah, that's where the demons sit. That's where the things sit that don't want you to have an effective communication, and it blows it up. And poor people, when you try to talk to each other, it is difficult. No matter what you talk about, somebody's always lying to somebody about what they really feel, about what their real reaction is. Because mainly you just want to get it over with, you know, on so many levels. Unless you don't want to get it over, unless you want to perpetuate it. So 212-209-2900, let's take some of your calls and let's hear about you in trying to communicate or what happens in your communications. Hi, this is Armand DeMille on the air. 212-209-2900, let's take one of your calls.
Hi, Mr. DeMille.
Hi there.
I'm Carlos. I'm from West Babylon, the wine dance area.
Hi, Carlos.
And you're just hitting the zone so many things. Keep battling back and forth. She has accusation of stuff that I really haven't done, and I'm on the defense, and I do what you always say not to do. I'm always psychoanalyzing her situation from her past. So, I mean, it's like, it's crazy, man. I told her, like you said, if we're going to end it, let's just end it, because I'm going to tell you the truth about me. Whether you can handle it or not, I'm telling you how I feel, and this is how I feel.
But is the primary issue here jealousy? She thinks you're fooling around and you're not?
Absolutely. I try to handle it, like you said, in a masterful way. Thought I was a better communicator. I said, but you're creating this dislike. I'm putting a distance. I love you, but I really dislike you. I'm starting to not like you.
Especially when you get accused of something. And let's say once you did cheat and this time you're not cheating. Whole thing is the nature of those conversations. So the nature of the conversation usually is evidentiary. First, the person asks you a question. Where were you tonight? And then you answer it. And then another question comes out. And then a third question, and you begin saying to yourself, something strange is going on here. These questions aren't just curiosity.
Right.
And then you realize that it's an investigation to try to trap you, because the person has a demon inside them, a terror, that you in some way are going to lie to them and cheat on them. Now, it may be that you have a history of doing this, and they could believe it, maybe for a reason. But when it gets to this level, where it's potential jealousy, threatening, and I don't even like to use the word jealousy. I want to say potential. It's fear.
Okay.
When that fear is activated, how do you diffuse it is the question, all right? Now, the truth of it is, what happens with most men when they're accused, especially of cheating or being attracted to other women, and women get accused of it too by their men,
yes.
What happens is the first thing you want to do is get out of the situation. You want to diffuse it. You want to say no. And then the person keeps after you and you want to say no. And then the other thing that happens is you get angry. Now, this anger is meant to, I mean, you just really get mad at the person. So the person keeps after you and you get angry back. And how do you deal with your anger? You wind up accusing her, psychoanalyzing her, telling her it's about her mother. You gaslight them, tell them they're crazy.
I do.
Yeah. I understand. Now, what would be a more effective method when it comes to the issue of a man being accused of infidelity when it hasn't happened? I don't know of a more effective issue because it is so primal. It is so intrinsic. I mean, Stephanie, talk to me about mate guarding. Hold on just a second. Let's check with Stephanie. Yeah. What is mate guarding?
Well, it's a very primitive instinct in all of us that if we think that somebody else is going to take away our partner, or that's usually how the woman feels, then you get irrational and you can't actually hear any kind of reasoning. And it's very hard to penetrate that with logical thought. So that's...
I've said that she can't hear my rationale behind what I'm saying to her because she's bringing in too much over protecting me or trying to prevent me.
So whatever you're doing is not working. This is what we know, right? So what you identify is mate guarding behavior. And when you see it coming in your direction, your thing, because you grew up this way. I could tell you grew up in the streets. I could tell you grew up having to defend yourself. And I could tell that you're tough. I could tell that you're not the kind of man to walk up to and insult because you're probably going to punch him. You know, you're not the kind of person who's gonna be accused and not react. You have automatic reactions that have saved your life.
I said that this morning, yes.
Okay, so now somebody comes along and in some way challenges you. You don't have the wherewithal to lay down your weapons and say, "Oh, honey, I know you feel a little insecure."
I know.
So here's what we hope for. We hope for the day when we could look at a partner and say, "Oh, I see you're scared. Is there anything I could do to reduce your fear? I'm not going to start dealing with facts." You know, if you could just drop into the heart of it. If you could, if it were possible, and I don't know if it is, because around this issue, I find most people are just totally, totally over the top.
Wow. How about when she gets up 12 o'clock when I get off work and looking over my shoulder for 1 hour when I'm on the computer? Afraid that I'm looking at some picture or talking to someone. I could be talking to my sister over the computer. I said, "You are creating an atmosphere that it is antagonizing me. I don't know how much longer I can deal with."
See, you've gotten to the point. You must have been like this as a kid. You've gotten to the point where you don't believe in your own freedom. And you now are the accountability for everything. And once you start becoming accountable, you're no longer a free human. You know, there's a point at which you have to have the ability to not account for yourself. The trouble with cell phones and beepers and all that other stuff is we've gotten to believe that everybody should account for every minute of their time, you know, and everything that they're doing. That's not what a relationship is. A relationship is two free people. But it's very difficult. Very difficult. You have my sympathies until you get to a better place.
Thank you, I've heard something in there, but I thank you. I'm going to listen on the radio from here.
Thanks a lot for calling in. 212-209-2900. One of the most difficult things, if you're married or if you have a relationship and you live with somebody, do you have any independence left? What's the story? I mean, is the story that you're no longer two people and that you don't have any... I mean, does the other person have the right to go through your wallet, or do you have the right to go through their purse? Is it there's no secrets allowed? That's what marriage is. No private places. If you have a conversation with one of your buddies, is the other person allowed to listen in on the conversation? You have no conversations that people aren't allowed to hear. What happens in relationships when a person relinquishes their independence, their freedom? Well, I don't know. The best relationships I know of have something built in for the person's privacy. that's your room, you know. You go in there, you watch television, watch whatever you want. That's what you want to do. But that's what seems to build the most. Not the other, which is two or one, and I own you, and now you own me, and that I'm accountable to myself. I don't know. What about you, Steph? You think that it works? What do you think is recommended? Do you think people should have space?
I certainly do. I believe people can challenge themselves and work through all those fears and understand it and hopefully tolerate in order to be together.
So if you're a man and your wife goes for a long walk and comes back and doesn't say where she was, you would be able to say, I'm okay with that.
That's a tricky one. Obviously, sure. A lot of people aren't going to be okay with that because it's instinctual. You have to understand, I think, as all of us have to understand, it's instinctual to say, what were you doing?
And that's where our demons come up.
Doesn't mean you act on it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the difference.
Uh-huh. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Armand, I wanted to ask you, I heard you say, talk about the demons in one's mind, and I have exactly that. I have a very serious family issue right now with my mother and my sister, very envious of me always. I was very successful, and they did not. They lived failed lives, but something happened with my father, an elderly man, and they got tired of taking care of him, so they decided to throw him out. They had a scheme just when I went away, and they put him into a psychiatric institution. Well, I had him taken out, and I was very good at what I did, and I helped him. And now the two of them threw me out of the house. I'm not allowed to go back, and my mother went and got a protective order against me because I was upset with her. And now I'm all upset, and I don't know how to handle this. It's a demon in my head, and I realize I'm rejected. Well, what do I do in a case like this?
Well, have you ever proposed to your family that you all go to a counselor and talk about this?
Well, they don't even want to speak with me anymore.
I know, but have you ever proposed
that? We did. Actually, we did. Of course, this was years ago. Actually, Armand, we had gone to you.
I know, I remember.
You do, and you know who I am.
Yeah.
Okay. Things have gotten horrible. I'm just so upset. I just don't know what to do, and my father's back at home thanks to my efforts. But now I can't even call. I'm not allowed to call. Can you imagine a protective order over nothing? They wanted to have me arrested, so they called the police. The police came, and they saw nothing wrong. So the police went, and they actually said, you're a very nice person, but that wasn't enough for my mother and my sister. They had to go and get a protective order. And, you know, anybody who asks for one, especially when you're elderly, gets one. It doesn't mean that anything happened, which nothing did. Meanwhile, and I'm now, I cannot go anywhere near the home, and my father's there, and he's cut off from me. So what do I do from here? They're not going to go back to counseling, I can assure you that. So what do
well,
I do?
Well, maybe there's a social work agency that could get involved.
Oh, you think so?
Yes, maybe there's a social work agency that gets involved, like some social work agency group that is, you know, that would be more effective at getting you to somehow create, to force some kind of communication. Because, you know, as you said, you have a right to be in there somehow.
Yes.
You know, you have a right to see your father and spend time with your father. Maybe there's some agency, and I could think of a couple of people I know who would be advocates of that, you know? Maybe there's some kind of something within the social work world that would intervene on your behalf.
And can you suggest someone, or do I call you afterward?
Well, there is one person I know who may. You know who I'm thinking of, Stephanie?
I'm sorry.
I'm thinking of Shreya Mandel, who may be able to help you with this. You can call my office and ask about that. Maybe you'll talk to Shreya. And she'll see what she could propose, okay?
Okay, thank you so very
sure.
much, and have a wonderful day.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Nothing more frustrating than when you get frozen out. You know, frozen out. When you get to the point where the person says, I just refuse to talk to you ever again. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Well, I'm listening to these other callers, and you know, I kind of see now. I feel like I'm in a situation also where there's not much to be done about it. But I thought the whole topic of the mirror neurons. What is the? I missed the first part of the program, but that's the maybe person who reflects emotionally. Is that right?
Yes, yes. Person with a lot of mirror neurons would be a person who would reflect emotionally.
And the, we'll say, opposite problem solver, is there a...
And the problem solver is the opposite of that, yes.
And what's the, say, technical term for that?
Well, let's call them just problem solver. Okay, so but which are you?
Well, I guess I have both. I certainly, but if I would say more of, I would say the mirror neuron person. Emotional, I think.
And where do you think, where's the problem you've run into with that, dealing with somebody who couldn't understand what you were feeling?
Well, as many, maybe many people who are listening, that, you know, reminds me, I have a recent experience in the family where somebody triggered something, my brother triggered something in me in a public situation. Happened to be after a funeral at my sister's house, and I could not handle it, and I was just, but I felt that he was deliberately doing something, you know, trying to dig somewhere, and he's a person who...
Are you alienated from your family at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Very difficult when you feel alienated from the family and you can't really make sense out of it. So do you suffer with the memory of this, with the image of this?
The image of what?
Of this separation, of this not being able to make the communication happen effectively.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so there's something in here that's incomplete. And you know, when I talked about the demons, sometimes what takes place represents something to us. And what does this represent to you? Is it that, you know, you always fail at love? Or what is it? What is a representative to you? What is it? What do you say to yourself? How do you put yourself down over this? Well, it may be too much for you to reflect on right now. But you have to look at what you're saying to yourself and look at those inner dialogues. And sometimes when you look at those inner dialogues, you see that you're repeating a whole piece of your history, that you're putting yourself down. You need to embrace yourself a little bit. You need to be loved. And if the first person who might be able to do it might be you. Thank you very much for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Armand.
Hello there.
Great show. I just have a problem. I'm an emotional guy. I'm not open, like reactive in that way, but I like to talk even to my male friends about their emotions, talk about my emotions, things like that. Well, anyway, I'm having a problem with my spouse, and we're going to a family counselor. And I have some things, some observations, and the difference with what I'm going through is that I know in times of anger that observations can seem like judgments. And when you were talking about, you know, psychoanalyzing someone and bringing up all those kind of points, I have a very hard time stepping away from it because my wife is a psychoanalyst and she is aware of all these things, and it's hard to step away from that. But what I started doing is I started writing on index cards these observations and these feelings, and I was thinking about bringing them to the counselor and bringing it up from that, having a third party being involved in the situation from that standpoint so these issues can be brought out. What do you think of that? Because these are serious issues that have to be addressed.
Yeah, you know, the truth of it is these are not serious issues. What's your first name?
My name is, call me Joe.
Make it up. Good job, Joe. Sure. Joe, you know, they're not really serious issues. They seem like serious issues. They're all just reactions that people go through. It's all like, you know, whatever you and your analysis of your wife and her analysis of you and hiring an analyst to help further analyze, what's missing here is the connection. What's missing is the basic trust between the two of you.
Absolutely.
And it's not going to be helped so much as much by going to an analyst as taking that very money and taking a vacation together.
Yeah, I understand that, but we're at a point now where these issues are also affecting the way that we raise our children.
Sure.
And that's the point that it's really serious, because my wife is almost vacant when it comes to setting limits and boundaries on the situations, and there's a kind of passive-aggressive quality to it, because I'm the one that's setting those boundaries, and then if she could step back from it and, say, have the last word on it by not being involved in it, it's a tactic, and it's just this type of stuff that I'm talking about. So
it's all about strategies, and I know what you're saying. And the main benefit that you could give your children is for you to find a way not to balance your wife, but the biggest gift you could give your kids is to show them that you two love each other. And you got to find a way to do that.
Well,
and I don't know if a therapist is going to help you do it by working on your problems.
But yeah, I know that, but there's a we're in a stalemate right now. We're almost at the point of real separation.
Yeah, I hear.
I mean, and that's the problem. And we're still living together, but the situation is almost at a point where it's irreconcilable, as she would say. I still am involved in it wholeheartedly. I want to be, but for her, from her standpoint, it's irreconcilable. And there's a lot of stuff churning in the background, so it becomes difficult to stay on track.
Absolutely.
And I think this is why, you know, we're going to this
Joe, I understand. Concert. Try whatever you can. If it doesn't work, try something else. You know?
Okay.
All right. I appreciate you so much. Thanks for calling in. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I have to be leaving you, my friends. We will be, we'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more stuff. This is, Autumn Nocturne by Lou Donaldson. And I'm going to let it play out, Michael. Mm-hmm.